Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah, A-Dream, in the building, shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in, look,
yes, sir.
Look, we came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Metro. So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down the to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life. From politics to the current events, economics and race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life, how we live in life.
Coming to you live and streaming to all four points of the globe. It's your girl, Brooklyn born and Crown Heights raised. Living life and breathing life. It's Bree, baby.
Hey, what's up, blessings. This is your girl, Bree, and you're listening to Bree Life Radio. And I'm joined tonight with my guest host.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. Well, like you know, tonight is going to be a really intense show. It's going to be very informative, and I hope that there are a lot of listeners out there, especially those who work in education, because this is what our topic is tonight. We are talking about the state of education, both locally and from a national perspective. And joining us tonight with our guest panelists are Timothy James, who's a specialist at the New York State Assembly, and also George Cook, who is the president of the Board of Education in New Jersey, in Hillside, New Jersey. George Cook is no stranger to the Life Radio show. For our regular listeners, he has been on several panels of discussions. One more famously known, what it is to be black in America today. So with further ado, I believe right now we're being joined with George Cook, and we'll bring him on the line. I'm sure Timothy James will be joining us shortly. George.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, how are you? Peace and blessings. And welcome back.
Peace and blessings to you. Oh, thanks for asking me to come back.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. I want to introduce you to my co-host, Red.
Hey, how are you, George?
How you doing? Nice to meet you.
Great. Good to meet you, Tim.
Well, without further ado, we're going to jump right in because this is a very granular topic that, you know, a lot of people, especially myself, who have school-age children, we're concerned about the state of education. I mean, since I was of school age, there have been a lot of things that needed to be addressed that seem to be ongoing issues, but there are some new issues that even I didn't face in the New York City public school system. And I know that you're from the state of New Jersey, George, but some of our neighboring state, your neighboring state's problems are very similar. So what we'll do is right now we'll jump into the first question, and I'll start. What do you feel the state of education currently is in your respective state and nationally as you know it to be?
Well, nationally, that's easy. The United States is not where it's supposed to be or where it should be. We rank, in the mid-teens to the 20s in certain areas, reading, literature, math. Where we used to lead, we're far behind, and that's our fault because we're not doing what other countries are doing with longer class, long school days. We're not following what's working around the world. We're not doing that because in education, people have their way of doing things and they get stuck there. But as education, as anybody in any state will tell you, it's in a constant stage of flux. What 2 years ago was considered new and fresh is now old. So in New Jersey, where having middle schools, elementary schools, high schools was a big thing a few years ago, and suddenly everybody wants to move back to K to 8. So education is constantly in a state of flux, and I think that's why our system has so many issues with education. There's not a lot of continuity and not a lot of consistency because things constantly change. You have the failed policy of No Child Left Behind, which drives everybody crazy. You know, President Obama's trying to fix that, but it's in a constant stage of flux. So like I said, whatever was the hot thing 2 years ago suddenly is getting flipped on its head now.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, here's the thing. I'm sorry, Red. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Okay.
Here's the thing. With regards to the No Child Left Behind policy in the state of New Jersey, how do you think that is benefiting the children? That's not really a planned question that we had, but, you know, I'm just interested to know what a neighboring state perspective and their policy is on exercising that No Child Left Behind.
Well, the thing with No Child Left Behind is until the waiver that Obama recently gave you, you didn't have much choice in No Child Left Behind. You had to do what the federal government said. You receive federal tax dollars. You do what they said, but what most people don't realize about No Child Left Behind is that it wasn't funded. Many parts of it were unfunded mandates. So school districts were spending money to stay in compliance that could have went other places as far as buildings, programs, and back into the classroom. But you had to stay in compliance with all these rules and regulations under No Child Left Behind, which, again, was not funded, so nobody liked it. I mean, it focused a lot on testing, and that's where the phrase "teach to the test" comes from. No Child Left Behind focused a lot on testing, and you had, I don't want to get too wonkish, but you have kids that can pass a test, but can't think open-minded, open-ended thinking. They can't do because they've basically been trained to pass a test. Because if you don't pass the test, you don't get the funding, and No Child Left Behind is I think they meant well, but the fact that they didn't fund it turned it into a complete disaster, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. That's an explanation. And I'm sure that those who are listening that didn't understand in the past what No Child Left Behind is, I believe you've given a clear understanding of what that policy actually means. Before I see that we're about to be joined with our other guest panelist, Timothy James. But before we bring him on, George, as I said, you're no stranger to Bree Life Radio. But for our new listeners, could you please just give us a little background on what you do and also tell the listeners about your blog?
I'm a writer, but I've always been involved with local issues, local politics, local activism. A few years ago, someone approached me and asked me, why don't I run for the board? At first, I really wasn't big into it. Although I wanted to work with kids, I didn't care for the politics. But once I got involved and I learned how to work with people, we were able to make change. We've opened up a new art school. We've opened up a new football field, new extracurriculars for our kids. We've been able to make progress, but it takes a community willing to work together, a school district willing to work with the community. It takes a lot of factors, but I'm very active in the community. Whether I'm elected or not, I will always do that. Whether it's appearing on your show, doing back to school, a supply drive, we do that kind of stuff all the time. Boy Scouts, I'm active in that. So we're all about doing for self and taking care of our own. That's really what I like to do.
Well, that's great, because I'm glad you brought up the topic of extracurricular activities, because that's another question that we'll be asking a little later on in the show. But what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a commercial break, and when we return, we're going to be joined with our other guest panelist, Timothy James, of the he's the special assistant to the New York State Assembly. So we'll be back in just a moment.
You can always do better, but can you really be better? The mistake many people make is that they live a life trying to be better. They pursue degrees, physical fitness,
physical.
Group acceptance.
Why can't we be friends?
Well,
uh-huh.
Relationships.
Be
trying to be better. The search for validation is draining and never ending. It is as elusive as a carrot outstretched before a horse.
It's unattainable.
Yet, we continue to run. We never accomplish enough. We never acquire enough.
It's never good enough.
We never try enough. And in our attempts to be better, we unwittingly tell ourselves we aren't enough. After all, who attempts to be better when they know they are enough? What's more than enough? Well, this is enough, and it's been Mark said it in under a minute.
Thank you for coming back. This is Bree Life Radio, and tonight our discussion is about the state of education. We're joined tonight with our guest panelist, George Cook from the Board of Education in the state of New Jersey, and shortly we will be joined with Timothy James, a specialist at the New York State Assembly. Before we bring Timothy on, I just want to make a note and reference all, well, firstly, the appreciation that I have for all the listeners. Last week, Bree Life Radio experienced a listenership that has not happened in the 9 months that we've been airing. I want to thank all of my supporters and the listeners and the fans for continuing to support the show, even throughout our hiatus. I received emails and text messages and personal phone calls from many listeners, you know, when is the show coming back on, offering show ideas and support. So, again, I just wanted to take the time out to thank everyone for the support that we received last week, and that gives me an indication that I must be providing you all with the provocative dialogue and provoking peripheral thoughts. So thank you again. And without further ado, we're going to bring on our next guest panelist, Timothy James, Special Assistant at the New York State Assembly. Peace and blessings, Timothy.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Hello to everybody there, and also to the other guest panelists. You were right on point with everything you were saying about no child left behind. So I'm very happy to be on this radio show with you. First, I just want to correct something. I'm special assistant to a state senator in New York, in the state of New York, state senate.
Okay.
You said state assembly. I was like, okay.
I apologize.
Anyway.
Thank you.
No, not a
thank
problem.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. But anyhow, I don't know where to start when it comes to the state of education in New York. Because, I mean, well, I only can speak about New York City. You know, New York has some great educational districts. Let's just say when it comes to New York City, the whole thing changes. First thing is great that there's a school board in the state of New Jersey. In New York City, let's be honest, for those who know the history of the city of New York, school boards were done away with back, it's been about 9 years now. Why? Because, let's be honest, school boards, when minorities began to take it over, that's next thing you know, they started saying, oh, school boards are not working. School boards are the problem of education, using them as an scapegoat. When actuality, the power to fix the problem in our communities first always rests with parents doing what they're supposed to do. But school boards gave you that power to say, look, we got a bad teacher here, we're going to vote no confidence, and soon enough, we're going to get rid of this teacher before she gets her tenure. So there was a lot of things that the school boards did, and, you know, God bless New Jersey for still having them. Just in the city of New York, we do not have school boards anymore. So that's something that New York City is definitely missing, and hopefully someday the legislature will wake up and say, you know what, we need them back.
Wow. Okay. George, do you have any thing to add to what you shared with us?
I mean, as you mentioned, school boards make a lot of decisions. School board members are people in that community. So you have, you already, those elected members are liaisons from the community to the schools. And you know your local issues. You know what's the biggest problems the issues have. You know which areas you need to get on first. Where if you just have the state shouting down orders or the mayor shouting down orders, he doesn't know what's going on in that school. He doesn't know. His one-size-fits-all approach may not work if you have kids who can't eat breakfast in the morning. They're worried about eating breakfast before their first class. There's different issues in every school, even amongst a district.
Definitely.
You can have different issues, and that one-size-fits-all approach does not work in education, as we saw with No Child Left Behind. You have to, each school itself, and this is, I don't want to get too far, but this is where good principles come in. Each school itself has to adapt to its own environment, its own population, and that,
this
to me,
true.
That only can be done on a local level.
Mm-hmm.
This is true.
Very
this
good.
This is true, but New York, but the mayor in the city of New York, mind you, taking it back there, you have a mayor that really doesn't have a clue to how to educate 1.1 million children in the city of New York. He really doesn't have a clue. That's why we have all of these consultants. The consultants in the city of New York literally make up as much as 10% of the overall budget of the city of New York, of the education budget of the city of New York. It is incredible. We have all of these consultants, and still the system has not changed in the years that he has been running it. The worst thing the state ever did was to turn it over to the mayor, to any mayor in the city of New York. They should not have done that. It should have rested. They needed to be changes. I'm not going to say school boards were the greatest thing in the world. I'm not going to say that. School boards had their problems. The reality is they could have easily fixed the issues with school boards. They did not do that. Again, they were the scapegoats to say the reason why education is doing bad is because school boards are here, get rid of them. And then look what happened. We've gotten rid of them. They've been gone for almost, 7, 8 years, and here we are now, and the federal government released its stats on the city of New York. We have made little to no gains in the last 7 years. So what does that say? Was school boards the problem, or was the curriculum the problem? There's so many things we can bring into the issue of why New York City education is not doing well. Yes, parents are going to have to do their job. Parents are part of the problem. They're not coming into the schools the way they're supposed to. They're not taking an active role. That's a problem. We realize that. That's something that parents have to do. Yes, schools have to be more inviting. Principals have to have a more of an open door policy. And, again, teachers. We have to hire good teachers. But I'm not going to blame a teacher when a child refuses to sit into that seat and this teacher now has to teach discipline. That's taught at home. What's taught in that school is education, and that is what the child is supposed to sit there and be ready to learn. And, of course, you know, breakfast in the morning and all of that, yeah, New York City has those issues too, because they were cutting the breakfast program at one point, then it came back, and then there's this whole new regulation to having the breakfast program in some of the schools in the city of New York. It, you know, like I said, the city of New York is definitely not New Jersey. It has got its serious issues, and the sad point is that the most of these 1.1 million children look like the three of us on this radio station, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners. That's what's sad. And with it not doing well, we're the ones being the most hurt. And the plan to fix it, they keep changing the plan, and each one of these plans have made little gains to our children walking into college. Ultimately, what we want to see is higher education. or at least graduating, when we talk of graduating out of high school even, our numbers have dropped.
Well, I want to stop right there, Timothy, because you're touching on, you are really touching on a lot of questions, some of the questions that we want to address. There's so much in what you just said, which leads us to the next question. I think Red wanted to ask that question.
Well, thank you for joining us, Timothy, as I was stating before. I just wanted to address a little bit of what you mentioned a few minutes ago about parents and being involved. My children are now grown. They're in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
However, when they were in the school sector, there was a lot of changes that happened, I guess, in the last 10, 15 years that looked like things were going to be moving forward and progressing. We went from addressing board members that were supposed to be part of the PTA. The PTA presidents were supposed to be able to go and take our concerns to the board. Then the boards turned to districts, and I'm part of District 4, actually. And so very active, and I was very much a part of what was going on in my kids' school. In fact, I became a parent facilitator to help assist a lot of the evening classes for parents who were doing adult education, parents who were young parents and who needed to have help in helping their children to do educational things and also to do other things at home and help them to them how to eat and things like that properly and stuff like that so that they will have the nutrition that they need. So when they came in, they were ready and alert. However, a lot of those programs are no longer in place. They've been done away with. No one is looking to replace those programs. And what few programs that we do have that's left are very minimal. And it's discouraged a lot of students. And that's why you have such a high rate of kids dropping out of school. My children became extremely disinterested right around junior high school. My daughter would come home and literally tell me, I hate school, I hate the teachers, I even hate the way the school looks. And that was all because of the fact that it's such a discouraging atmosphere to have to go in and constantly not have the tools that you need and being taught by what would seemingly be disinterested teachers in an environment that was not conducive to learning at all, which leads me into question number two, because it was greatly overcrowded. She changed school four times because she could not find her space, her place where she felt wanted and she felt comfortable there. So she eventually became disinterested, and she just stopped going, and it became very problematic. So for parents that are listening, who have children like my daughter was, who now she's in college, so she's much better now. But it took a minute for her to get there. And all of it had to do with the fact that there was nothing that she could grab hold onto to say that I'm motivated, I want to get up, and I want to go and do what I need to do in order to get my education. Why? Because I know that where I'm going, they give a damn. So I have a huge problem when they say, oh, well, you know, the parents are not involved and things like that. I get that. Not all parents are involved. They should be, but some cannot be. I was a working parent when I involved. A lot of my activities with them had to be at night, but I tried to make it work for as long as I could. But, you know, I was just interested in that part of it because I just wanted to know what you thought about the fact that there are parents out there who do
want
to be involved, but they can't because there are no programs or anything in place for them.
Okay. Well, let me respond to that. First thing, parents like yourself don't exist to the large number the way there needs to be to make the system better. Problem is, a lot of parents, first thing, let me take it really from the beginning, what the problem that we're having with parents. And just hear me out. First thing, I'm going to speak about South Jamaica, because here's where I grew up. So let me just give you just real quick the issue with South Jamaica. South Jamaica went through a transformation. We had a situation around the 80s where we were saturated with drugs from a particular drug dealer who's locked up for life. The issue is it destroyed, to some degree, the community where it had to be rebuilt literally from within. And the problem now is that we're the offsprings of all of that damage that happened back in the late 70s and 80s, these are the offsprings of them now. And the issue is you have parents who are as young as 22, 23, have children in the school and have no clue on how to be parents, have no clue whatsoever, haven't received any training. The Board of Ed will try and hold some type of workshops or whatever, but they never hold them at the time when parents can really come out. That's one thing. Two, you know, let's be honest, there's no more Big Mama, you know, the mm-hmm. grandmother that always would lend advice to that young mother about, look, whether the father's here or not, you know what you got to do to raise your child and put education at the top of the list of what you have to do to make sure that your child has a future in this community or in this world. Now, I'm speaking that from South Jamaica, the issues we had here for our lack of parental involvement, because you have that, you have, you know, again, parents in jail, grandparents taking over the role, and a lot of the grandparents, and again, I'm speaking from data from South Jamaica, they're in their 70s going back into the system to raise a child that's 6 or 7 years old, and they're not equipped. They really don't have the stamina to do that again. But yet they're going to do that because that is their grandchild or great-grandchild, and they're determined to keep the family together as best as they can. So you have those issues. And again, that's I'm just talking again from South Jamaica. Parents can make a difference for a school that is at level or failing. Parents can change that. When we had a school, when we had a school here in this community that I can remember a little over 10 years ago that was failing beyond belief, parents got together and stepped in and said, if you close that school, we're going to march down. At back then it was 110 Livingston Street, and today it's the Tweed Building. They marched down there and shut down Livingston Street and dared them to shut that school down. Guess what? That school remained open, and they put the resources in there to fix the problem. Parents were involved in. They didn't spend the money on the school the way they were supposed to. For some reason, whatever the politics was, the school was cut tremendously, and it didn't receive its fair funding. And that's a whole other thing that we'll get into later, I hope, the funding. But anyway, those are issues that happen that led to, you know, why sometimes you have parents that are not involved. But remember, here we are now, 10 years later, and this issue of parent involvement is the reason why they get away with things that they do in the city of New York as far as education, because they roll right over these parents. Why? Because it's only you go to a school PTA, you'll have 6 or 7 members. And when the school has 500 kids, you've got 6 or 7 parents showing up to a PTA meeting. And, I'm not coming down on parents like, oh, they're just an issue and that's it. No, what I'm saying is that here is like the formula of the problem, parental involvement, teachers that we need to dump and get rid of because some of them barely speak our language. Others have barely been trained properly to deal with the different cultures in our community. They have no clue. So, and principals who are not strong managers, because we have this principal training institute that the mayor set up, and let's not talk about that, but that's one of the worst institutes, and it has produced some of the worst principals that came into the city of New York. So, you know, again, all of those factors is destroying education as far as what I'm saying in South Jamaica, Queens. That is the formula which is destroying us. Okay. Now, How do we fix the problem? Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. And that all of those things are very interesting and valid, and I do believe in Big Mama. It's unfortunate we don't have a lot of them. But I need to move on to the next question. Since 1978, the public school system has had an ongoing problem with overcrowding in the classroom. So can you tell us what, if any, are being done to spearhead to reduce the class sizes?
Okay, first thing, you have...
and this is to both of you, of course.
Okay. I'm sure New Jersey has a similar type of funding.
Yes, definitely.
Because we have in New York City called, well, the state of New York instituted what's called the Ladder Program. I'm trying to remember the exact each individual phase of it, but basically what it does is it's for having the smaller class sizes. You get increased funding for having the class sizes smaller. And what happens is you're opening up more classrooms, but again, it comes down to classroom space. Look, let's be honest here. We got a brand new casino in the borough of Queens. Now, gambling money, at least for the state of New York, was supposed to be strictly used for education. Part of the problem is they keep dropping the money into the general budget, and then it gets lost. So then they come up with this funding formula that never seems to work for the communities of color. It seems to work on the other side. How do we deal with it? One, we're going to need to go to Albany on lobby day, and if necessary, and I'm talking like a revolutionary, I guess, shut it down until they come to the grips of, guess what? We need to build more schools than stadiums, because that in Brooklyn was built so fast and with so many dollars that they had available, it was embarrassing when we can't get a school built that has enough room for the activities and all of those things that we want to see young people have and be involved in. They never have enough money to build the school to fit the community that it's in. But yet, they'll build a stadium and build it twice the size of really what it's needed. But education seems to take the back burner. So our issue is, one, we need to make them put that money of the lotto money, the casino money, back into education and it not to hit the general budget. That's the first thing. And then actually there is a law that actually says you have to do it. Problem is they go around the law because there's loopholes that ends up in the general budget. So
of course, there's loophole.
just so you know, there is money to build schools. The problem is they won't use it. They want to plug other issues in the state with education money. Why it takes a back burner, because we don't scream loud enough.
Thank you for that answer. So I'm going to now give George the opportunity. George, you can answer the first part of the question when I was talking about the whole parents and involvement as well, and go into the whole overcrowding situation because you are from Jersey, so I know it's different. Yeah.
Well, parental involvement, that's the same no matter which state you're in, no matter where you're at, and I'm when we say parental involvement, everybody automatically assumes we mean the parents that's constantly marching down to the school, always at every board meeting, and always every PTA meeting. We understand that's realistically not possible, especially not in this economy. But when I say parental involvement, I mean when your child comes home with that book bag, don't let your child sit there and do what they got to do, put the stuff back in the bag, and that's it. No, the parent has to take the time to go through that bag. There should be a book in there, something with homework, what the assignments were for the day. If the parent takes 5 minutes and checks that, now the child knows I got to be on point. Mommy, daddy, hopefully both are going to check this. So if that's set at home, that gets the kid right when they go to school. And I know every parent can't come to every meeting. Here in New Jersey, we have a thing called parent-teacher night where hopefully that one night the parents can come and meet all their teachers. Unfortunately, and I'm not trying to dog parents, that's the last time many teachers will see those parents unless the kid gets in trouble.
This is true.
You have to remember, parents are your first teacher. Mm-hmm. Parents are, when you go home, that's who you end your day with. So the person you spend the majority of your time with sets the tone. That's, if your parents value education, you will value education. That's why you have people come over from the islands, from Africa. Their mm-hmm. kids are scared to go home with anything less than a B. Because in their household, that's the law. You don't work, you don't pay taxes, you have nothing else to do but go to school and learn. So we know it can be done, but people have to make it a priority, have to make it an emphasis. Everybody talks about it, we want this, we want that. And you had mentioned, like, when you go to a school, a nice school, you see a nice track in the back, it's nice and airy, nice paint job. And, well, why can't – what a lot of people don't know is those parents there through their PTA, they got together and raised money and did it and gave them – a lot of times it's not the school or the school board itself that does some of these things. The parents want their children to have, so they go get it. They don't just point and say, look at that. They go do something about it. And when you have that and you have a school board willing to work with that, you can get amazing things done. And as far as overcrowding, with this economy, every school district is facing that because charter schools, unfortunately, are shutting down, private schools, Catholic schools, and these kids are all suddenly flooding back into the public school system. And we like to have a class size of no bigger than 17, 18. But when one year you suddenly get 300 more fourth graders, like, well, where'd they all come from? So that's the situation everybody is dealing with. And New Jersey, because we still do have school boards, if we want to build a new school, we have to put it out for a referendum. We have to let people vote on it. And unfortunately, nobody's going to vote to raise their own taxes. So getting a new school right now is very hard. So schools, we try and block scheduling where you try to stagger the start times at each grade so they're all not in there at the same time, which in theory would give you more class space, but you still have your lunches, you still have your gyms. So I mean, when you get a sudden flood of kids, it's something every district is dealing with. There's no easy answers because the numbers go up one year, down the next year. But it's something it's going to take a lot of state, county, a lot of people have to work on it. Like, we need new buildings. There's no other way to go around it. You mentioned stadiums. They're building stadiums. They're building jails. If you can build jails, as far as I'm concerned, for every jail you build, you should build a school. We simply need more buildings. We don't have them. The population is growing. More kids are going to public school because their parents can't afford it. And these are real issues. And people need to know about this. People complain, and they complain out of ignorance, but they really don't know because no one tells them. They're not getting the information. And they mean well. I think every parent wants the best for their child. They mean well, but a lot of people don't know how to really go about it. Like, the guidance is not there, and we need that guidance back in our community where people, it was just certain, when I was growing up, there were certain things you were supposed to do, and we need to get that back.
Well, at this point, what I want to do, first I'm going to make a brief comment about both gentlemen's statements, and then we're going to take a commercial break. The one thing that I want to say synonymously that I'm hearing from both of you is that although you have very passionate feelings about your state government and what the local municipalities are doing or not doing for the school systems in your respective states, here's something that I hear from the both of you that I personally share as a mother of a now 15-year-old son that I'm proud to say, and that is that parents have to take a more granular control and understanding of what happens to their child when they're in school for 6 to 8 hours. They have to know. Like George said, going in the book bag. I'm notorious for going in my son's book bag and looking at that daily agenda to make sure that I'm aware of all the assignments that he has to turn in, what his homework is, because, you know, there was a moment there where my son was slacking off and he was saying, I don't have any homework. I'm like, you don't have any homework? Why don't you have any homework? Oh, I did it in school. And then I get a progress report that says that my son isn't turning in his homework. So I'm one of those big mamas because I was raised by one that did not take crap for nothing. I could tell you a funny story to end off the show about my big mama. But what I'll tell you is, I said, oh, we going to get down like this, Glenn? Well, I'm going to show you how we get down. So since at that point I was laid off from work and I had plenty of time to go back to school, I went to school the day before, talked to his school administrator, talked to his assistant principal, and I said, I want to teach my son a lesson that is very important for him to do the only thing that's required of him right now, to go to school, learn, and get this education. So the school made arrangements for a new student to be present in all Glenn's classes. And guess who she was? His mama. And I sat next to I was introduced at homeroom, and he was wondering why at homeroom the seat was empty, because his best friend used to sit next to him in homeroom class every day. But his best friend was instructed that he could no longer sit next to Glenn. And Glenn didn't know why until I was introduced. And for 3 days, I went back to junior high school. I did eighth grade over. And I was pissed. And he was pissed. But I said, you know what? If you want to get down like this, I'm going to show you that mom gets down with the get down. I'm going to show you how school is supposed to be done. We're going to do homework. I'm going to show you how homework has to be done. I'm going to show you how you have to behave. I'm going to show you all of that, because this is very important here. What you do here and how you conduct yourself will determine what type of man you're going to be. So this is what has to be done. Now, was that quite severe? Some people might say yes, and some people, you know, actually, at Glenn's graduation, his assistant principal said that Glenn's mother should be handed his diploma, because I was very active in the school. I used to go up to the school about 3 times a week and tutor. You got to take an active role in your children's life, and you also should be very active in your community. Be active in the school so you know what's going on and what should be going on, and participate. I'm not the parent of the year. I'm flawed. I make mistakes, but I love my son.
Amen.
And I take pride in participating because my mother did it. And maybe if my mother wasn't as hard on me as she was, because, you know, I couldn't see the light of day most of the time. The only air that I got on my skin was when it was time to walk home and walk to and from school. But I have to be thankful for her, because maybe if she wasn't as hard on me being a single parent for a certain period of time, I might be different. So you both are very right in saying that parents are the first teachers, that we should take a more active role. And sometimes you got to do some very extreme things for these kids to get the point.
Mm-hmm.
Also, but see, when parents do extreme things, not controversial things, not abusive things, but when they do things that show that they're present, that they're interested by going up to the school and being active, it makes the teachers more accountable, because they know that at least there's one parent that they of a student that they teach is paying attention to what they're doing. And also the open door policy to talk to the principals. Yes, there should be one, and I exercised it as much as I possibly could, because when there was something that I did not understand, I didn't like, or I was very happy with, I made sure that I communicated that to the principal and the assistant principals. So that's my 2 cents. At this point, we're going to take a commercial break. We're going to inhale and breathe light. like we do on the show, and we're going to come back in a minute.
It is very common to hear people use the phrase, I'm going to be me, 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 me. I'm not changing for anybody. And they use that phrase a lot of times to suggest that nothing's wrong with them and they're fine with being who they are. But here's a question. What happens when being you leaves you with only you? You know, like you're acting the way you act and people leave the room. You lose two or three friends at a time. You talk to the mirror more than you talk to your best friend.
You take long walks in the park over your own head.
My suggestion is don't change. Don't change. Because, after all, you like being you. Now, here's some problems with being you. Not considering you may end up walking through the room holding your own hand by yourself. But that's okay, because guess what? You're still being you. So, if you're liking it, I'm loving it. And remember, don't stop being you.
Don't you change, baby.
Not for anybody. Even yourself. This has been Mark Said in Under a Minute.
And we're back to the Bree Life Radio Show. I'm your host, Bree. And tonight, our discussion is regarding the state of education. We're joined with Timothy James and George Cook, and of course, my guest co-host, Reg. And I think how we ended our last segment is a perfect segue to the next question, and that is, can you explain the cause and effect of the decrease of extracurricular activities in public schools and what is being done to both provide funding, which I know Timothy really wants to express to us, and to lobby for community support to develop such programs. And if we can, we're going to start with George, and then we're going to go to Timothy.
And unfortunately, I know here in New Jersey where budgets are voted on and things like that, the first casualty of any budget failing or not having enough money are extracurriculars. Normally it starts with the music programs, the sports that are quote-unquote not that popular, but pretty soon after years, everything is gone or deteriorated to where there's not much outside of football and basketball. It's economic reasons it happens, but what we see is a lot of kids go to school just because of sports, because of extracurriculars. That's like the carrot that gets them to go. And we have to, and our educators understand that, but I don't think the people that have to dole out the money, that make the rules, that cut the checks, I don't think they see those as priorities or classes that we necessarily need to have. I mean, when Governor Christie took over 3 years ago, many schools in New Jersey literally cut their sports programs. They cut everything because we were told, we had to save this much and we had to cut this much. And the only way to do it, unfortunately, was to cut your sports programs. And it was harsh reality. But if you want these, I mean, some schools wouldn't pay to play, where the kids actually have to pay a fee to play, which I personally am against. If you pay taxes in a town or a community, why should your child have to pay to play a sport? But that's what some districts have done. Music especially gets kids thinking. It helps, don't know why, but it seems to help kids with math and critical thinking. So everybody in education understands the importance of extracurriculars, but when you're forced, when you have to look at a football or a saxophone or a school book, as educators, you always have to go with that school book. Then that's the tough choices people are being forced to make, and like I said before, many parents don't know the choices districts have to make in order to make sure that our kids are being educated. And I don't want to say properly educated, because everything that's supposed to happen is not happening in every district. But at school districts, you always have to put school books above balls, unfortunately.
That's true.
I would ask before Timothy starts, could anyone that has a television or radio possibly playing within earshot of them, if they could turn it down or maybe exit the room, because we're getting a bit of feedback? Okay, that's better. So, Timothy, I know that you have a lot to say about this particular issue, but before you do, I just want to inject a perspective of my own. When I was in public school and junior high school, there were so many extracurricular activities for people of that school age. More particularly, programs like Brownies, the Boy Scouts, the Cub Scouts, the Girl Scouts, where are they? There were sports programs. There were martial arts programs, one that my brother and cousin spearheaded at Mega Evers College for youth. There were youth groups in the church. None of these programs seem to exist for young children. And I just want to have an understanding what really is going on, and I really need to hear something about the community support as well as the lack of funding that we're getting from I don't know, the state, the Board of Education, the Department of Education. What's happening, Timothy?
All right. Again, in the city of New York, we have an agency called Division of Community Youth, Division of Youth and Community Development, which was really a merger of the old Area Policy Board and the Youth Board. They kind of merged them together to become one agency. That agency has been, since its existence, the major funder of youth programs in the city of New York. The problem is now is that the state cut back on giving DYCD the monies that it needs to put programs in the schools based on, poverty level and other criteria that they determine we need a program there. In the city of New York right now, the only guaranteed programs that are operating in the city of New York right now are the Beacons. Problem, and this is the Beacon started up under former Mayor David Dinkins back some years ago. He needed the idea around the Beacons, which is short for Beacons of Light, was to have safe havens for youth to go to, and because of all of the issues of the gangs and the drug dealers and all those things that the ills that we have in the community. So he started up one Beacon, and he said, okay, where do we place these Beacons? Because we can't afford to build any new buildings. We can't afford to build a youth center. Said, hey, schools are not in use after 3:01 p.m. So let's use these schools that have nothing going on in the evenings. So his plan was to start up and fully fund 90 Beacons in the city of New York. Well, 90 Beacons from the time that he was the mayor of the city of New York has changed to 80, and then under this mayor, he put cuts in, so I believe there's only about 70 Beacons left. They are strategically positioned around the city of New York. Now, the problem is 70 Beacons are nowhere near enough to provide the type of extra curriculum or extra activities that school children need. It doesn't. I ran one myself a few years back. I had to go begging the politicians for the money that's needed, for the extra money that I needed to really provide a strong program that, in turn, I made a difference. Besides the homework help, you know, in my day, I learned how to swim from going to the Y in the city of New York. But, you know, the Y's took heavy cuts. That's one thing, the Division of Youth and Community Development. The other thing is you have the city, the Department of Ed, is squeezing the not-for-profits that may raise dollars to not necessarily through DYCD, but go to other funding sources. And now the not-for-profits are paying these high rents to be in schools when normally a school was free from 3 to 6 p.m. They're beginning to get rent bills. Well, you know, they barely had enough money to provide the program in the first place. Now you're hitting them with rent. That's another thing. The city, the Board of Ed is going to have to determine, look, do you want after-school programs? We're not-for-profits. We'll pay the people to be there, but they can't afford to pay the rent. So, you know, you're going to have a give and take. But the Board of Ed will tell you, well, we got to pay the custodial fees, and we got to pay this fee, and, you know, all of these fees that come to light that hurts the not-for-profit that try to provide some of these activities. You know, again, it comes down to one important thing. There is the funding source. If we can just convince the state legislature to stop dipping into monies that were guaranteed for education. Yes, books are first and foremost important. We cannot cut the classroom. But we also know that the arts program, all of the studies have shown children do better when you have the arts programs in there. The Boy Scouts, Weblos, Girl Scouts, all of those things help to make children more involved, want to go to school every day, want to be a part of everything that's going on. Again, you know, I take it personal that here we are in 2012 that we can't convince a legislature to really take a good look at this and say, okay, we're not going to dip into this here, when there's other areas what they can do to fix the issue with the budget to give New York City more dollars. Because New York City is the largest municipality in the state of New York, and yes, we take the largest sum of money that the state sends down when it comes to education. But again, we have the largest number. We're the third or fourth largest system in the country. So we need a lot more dollars. Parents, and again, I know parents are doing their job. Yes, they are. I don't want parents to think that they're not. I'm just saying that in some cases, yes, you have these not-for-profits that are in there now beginning to charge these fees, and sometimes the fees are beyond what parents can afford to pay, or better yet, choose to pay, because, hey, paying the rent is more important than the light bill and the gas bill. We get that. But there is no reason why we can't come to terms with the state budget again if not just parents, the community screams and says, we want you to fund this, and you know what? Figure it out and make it happen. Especially when we know there's dollars from a place you can take it from and you can figure out how to make it fit. And that's why we have politicians up there. That's their job, to figure it out. You know, the governor, the mayor, figure it out. All parents want to know is, we're going to have a great school in our community.
Well, all right.
Okay.
Red, do you have a question you'd like to ask Tim?
Yes. I do want to add, though, I am definitely for the arts. I grew up in the arts. I'm for the arts. I wish they would work it out and figure out something, because we really do need that. And a lot of our children, music saves their lives. Kids go home to all kinds of craziness, and they need some type of outlet in order for them to feel good about themselves. So I believe in that. We need to figure out a way to fight for that. But moving on to the next question, which probably has already been answered within the question answer that you just gave, but with all the current, I'm getting feedback. I don't know what that is. With all the current government changes and platforms that we've been hearing from the two candidates for president, that's being introduced, has there been any budgetary issues and challenges in regards to the special needs child, the children's programs for special needs children as in special ed and things of that nature? On that's for both of you and in either state.
Well, put it this way. I think that's the only program that's safe because of mandates. I think that's special ed is the only thing that's safe. One of the things that they're trying to do, again, in the city of New York, is mainstreaming children into regular ed, who in some cases, yes, it is a good thing to do, but in other cases, what they're doing it to try and move some of those dollars over into the general ed money so they can kind of, so that way they can increase the budget. You know, look, I'm not an educator. I just give advice from the things that I've seen and being a part of the system for years. You know, again, all these consultants, and for some reason, they can't seem to come up with a proper plan that, in other words, where you know those programs are protected and we're getting the best buck for the dollar and making sure that our children are going to get something more than just a piece of paper that says they're completed 4 years of education and not instead of they're supposed to get a high school diploma. Those are other issues that come into play when it comes to special ed in the city of New York. It's just there are a lot of issues with that, and I realize it depends the classification of special ed for each individual child. We, you know, I understand that. But who is running the system as far as when it comes to special ed, that needs to be that leaves something to be desired. We need to really, what needs to happen is parents have to come out again, and our community as a whole have to come out to the meetings when they break it down on how they're trying to take those dollars and move it into the general ed classroom and see if that benefits your individual community or the individual child where you live, because it doesn't work everywhere in the city of New York. Every district is different. Every community is different. For that matter, every school is different. So we have to, they need to get more input from parents and community itself saying, all right, let's break this down. Make us understand exactly what you're going to do and show me how the data shows that this is going to work over a period of 3 to 5 years. And a lot of times it's very difficult for them to do that because they really don't go and look for the data. They just listen to some consultant tell them who's being paid $200,000 a year, who visits a school twice or three times in a month. This is a good idea, and that's it, without really checking data. So that's my response, because I can go into a whole lot more, but I'm going to be nice.
Oh, but before George answers, I just want to let you know that it's clear that we're like our previous topic about what it is to be black in America today. As George knows, this is a topic that we're probably going to have to have a three-part series on. So I would ask that, you know, both gentlemen be open to participating in this series, because there's just so much to be covered.
Oh,
yeah, I'm there. Yeah, I'm there.
Okay.
Oh, count me in. Count me in.
All right, Jim.
So,
George? Yeah, but as a Board of Education member, like, mm-hmm. special ed is like, it's something that drives boards of education crazy. Just last year, we were able to mainstream some of our autistic students, and it saved the district about $30,000-$40,000. We're a much smaller district in New York, but the thing with special needs students is that whereas a regular student may cost you $16,000 to $20,000 a year, a special needs student costs you upwards $100,000 plus a year to educate that child, and with no child left behind. The things that you have to do for a special needs child can increase that, and again, it's not funded. So there's always something school districts struggle with, because you want to give every kid a decent education, but the costs are so crazy under No Child Left Behind, and it's something every school board member struggles with, because when the parents come, every parent wants the best for their child regardless of their child's situation. And sometimes that does mean sending the child out of district, which would cost way more than $100,000, but it's the best thing for the child. And it's done on, I know districts in New Jersey fight this battle every day. Parents, they'll find out about a new school with all the bells and whistles, and they want to send their child there. And you can't blame the parent, because they want the best for their child. It's just one of those situations where it's tough, because as a school district, you don't want to spend all your money, but you know parents want the best, and it's like, this is one thing that drives us all crazy, because if you don't want to see the parents' face when you tell them we can't afford this right now, or we can't do this right now, or actually what the state says, this is all we can do, or we can't do more than this. I mean, there's so many laws, state law, federal law, there's so many laws going around. You're constantly tripping over yourself, trying to do the right thing by a child, but then you have to remember you have thousands of other students that you're also responsible for, and you don't want to spend a large sum of your money on four or five students. So it's a constant it's a constant battle. It's a tough battle. That's one of those situations in education. I think it will be a long time before that's resolved, especially as long as No Child Left Behind is in place.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do, thank you, George. What we're going to do now is we're going to take a commercial break to inhale and breathe light, of course. And when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion on what is the current state of education. I want to thank, again, our guest panelists, and we'll be back in just a moment.
You can always do better, but can you really be better? The mistake many people make is that they live a life trying to be better. They pursue degrees, physical fitness,
physical.
Group acceptance. Wealth, relationships. Trying to be better. The search for validation is draining and never ending. It is as elusive as a carrot outstretched before a horse.
It's unattainable.
Yet we continue to run. We never accomplish enough. We never acquire enough.
It's never good enough.
We never try enough. And in our attempts to be better, we unwittingly tell ourselves we aren't enough. After all, who attempts to be better when they know they are enough? What's more than enough? Well, this is enough, and it's been Mark said it in under a minute.
Just the other day, I was involved in a very passionate and provocative discourse on race. You know, race, as in skin color differentiation and definition. And I came away with a thought. Injustice is never justified. But you'll never attain it by simply switching the color of the controller.
The color of who's in power.
To believe a person will administer justice to you just because he looks like you is a romantic psychological construct
that don't always work.
Justice can only come from those who are just, and that may not include the us that looks like you.
I'm just saying.
This has been Mark Pettit in under a minute.
Thank you. We're back. Before I continue, I believe that someone has some feedback, so if you could just check your immediate area to make sure maybe your laptop or desktop isn't on, so that there's no feedback. We're back. It's Bree Life Radio. I'm your girl, Bree. I'm joined tonight with Timothy James and George Cook and my guest co-host, Red, and we are talking about the state of education. Moving along with the questions, I want to, I think my next question is going to be, and I'm going to pose this to Timothy first, with all, what do you honestly think that the president has done to improve the state of education? And should he be reelected, what further improvements are important for him to address in this next term?
Well, for one thing, the state of New York won a piece of the grant that he had put out under his administration. And I'm kind of forgetting the name of the grant right now, so forgive me.
Race to the Top.
Yes, Race to the Top. Yes, thank you. So New York State was a big winner. Problem is the state's issue. With that comes teacher evaluations and other things in there that we have to show that we're making a change in the system. Problem is we didn't seem to come to grips with UFT on teacher evaluations, so some of that money in the state of New York is on hold until we agree on a teacher evaluation system, and especially for the city of New York, which this mayor has not signed off on it. The governor might have signed off, but the city of New York, the mayor must sign off in order for those dollars to be released again. So, you know, again, politics playing in that issue. Now, when it comes to our president, I think he made education not just in that just that grant, but I do believe him visiting the schools more than any other president and him really focusing and talking to youth, I think he's done a great job. In, especially when you look at he doesn't have Congress really backing him up because it's again, playing politics of a different party. Look, we have to be real with this. We know that the other gentleman that is running for office, we won't mention his name, the other gentleman has not produced. Yeah, okay, we'll call him Pinocchio. He has not produced one good idea that would make me believe that he has a better plan for education than our present president. He has not put anything forward. So my thing is, you know, in some cases, you know, this may be a bad thing to say, but sometimes it's deal with the devil that you know than the one that you don't know. Mm. And my thing is, he has showed us what he is going to do these first 4 years. Now let's see what he'll do in the next 4 years. And I'd rather go with not just because he happens to look like me, but because I look at what his accomplishments are and I look at what the things he is planning for the future, and does it make sense? Does it add up in the dollars? Do these policies, if enacted, will it affect our community? I believe yes, it will, and I believe it will affect us positively, opposed to somebody else that's just going to tell you, I have a plan for education. I'll let you know soon. And we still don't know what it is, but we have a plan. All right. I don't need to just hear I have a plan. I want to know specifics. And this president has done that. So, yes, I believe he should be reelected. I believe 4 more years under this president administration will bring up, will definitely, one, will be more of a focus on education, especially in communities of we'll say, communities of color or communities of, you know, low-income communities. I believe he will put more dollars in there. Yes, we need to be more competitive as an education community. We definitely need to be more competitive, and I know we have to change the issue, change these policies that are right here in the city and the state of New York to make sure that we receive more dollars from the state of education. And finally, I just want to say we need to change, and I'm saying this to all the parents out there, how they deliver the funding to the city of New York and how they deliver the funding directly to the schools, that looking at that policy or that equation on how they do it is something we need to look at. And the president can't fix that. That's something we have to fix. So I just want to make you mindful of that.
Okay. Now, George, what
yeah,
say
we've
you?
Already, I say I'm number one. President Obama has done a lot of things, many of which I'm sure people don't know, but we've already mentioned Race to the Top, and I want to tell Tim, at least your governor got the paperwork in on time. New Jersey missed out on the first round completely because Christie wasn't paying attention. But President Obama, what he's done is, a lot of people don't know, he's loosened the restrictions on No Child Left Behind to allow each state to at least tailor their their system to their needs. He's done that, and he's also put aside $1 million to increase the number of STEM teachers, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. He wants to increase the number of teachers in all those areas which are vital in this global economy. He's already made the investment in education. The other guy, which you call Pinocchio, his whole big idea is vouchers. And what vouchers do is the kids that have parents that care get their kids out of bad schools. But if the bad schools don't go away, kids get separated and railroaded into those. Kids will still be going to those schools. Vouchers don't fix bad schools. It's just a Band-Aid. So you have a guy who wants to fix all schools in President Obama. And I think there's no way, if you care about education, there's no way you can vote for the other guy. You have to vote for someone that has a track record of doing things in education. When you go to higher education, there's what he's done to save Pell Grants. There's what he's done to help HBCUs. So he has a track record in education, unlike someone else who constantly lies about their school district was number one in the country, but he never tells the fact that it was number one in a certain criteria. It wasn't number one overall. So this is the type, you have somebody who lies about their accomplishments, who has done nothing but suggest vouchers, I would pick the guy who's actually done something of substance to lead our educational system. And, you know, President Obama, he's your guy if you're for education.
All right. Well, what we're going to do is, again, we're really have a lot of time left, and there's another question that I'm going to pose to both gentlemen in a moment. We're going to take a commercial break. I'll just tell you what that question is in advance, so it'll give you both some time to reflect. I don't know about your state, George, but I know here in New York, we have this, I think, of the last maybe 5 years, Timothy, and you can correct me and give me the actual length of time that has been that we've actually had these types of schools. But charter schools have been a new dynamic in education now. And I don't know if your state, George, has charter schools.
Oh, no. We have them. There's a big fight between boards of education and charter schools, so I may get a little bit upset when you go there. But
okay, well, you know, inhale and breathe light, baby. That's what we do here. and I want you both to reflect on that, and then when we come back, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about charter schools, and then I'm going to give you both ample time to touch on some topics that maybe our questions didn't provoke, and that's where we'll go from there. So we'll be back in a moment.
It's the Read Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
The Read Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
It's the Read Life Show.
You gotta turn it on. The Read Life. The Read Life. You gotta turn it on.
It's the Read Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
The Read Life Show.
You gotta turn it on.
It's the Read Life Show.
You gotta turn it on. The Read Life. The Read Life. You gotta turn her on.
Tune in Wednesday and Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for real talk about real life. Inhale and breathe light. It's the Breathe Life Radio Show on blogtalkradio.com/BRILIFE.
It's the Breathe Life Show.
And we're back. You have reached the Breathe Life Radio Show. I'm your host, Bree. And I'm joined tonight with Timothy James and George Cook and my co-host, Red. And we're talking about the state of education. Before we actually touch on the charter school question, I noticed that we have a few callers in queue. I'm going to take our first caller, is 757-440. Peace and blessings. You've reached the Bree Life Radio Show.
What's up? This is Alex. What's going down?
Hello, Alex. How are you?
What's happening? You got Red on too, huh?
Hello,
yeah.
I'm here. Hi.
Hey, Red, you know I owe you a phone call. I've been busy, yes, baby, but I'll get to you.
Okay.
You know what I'm working on, so be patient with me.
Okay. All right, honey.
So what's up, y'all? What's happening?
Well, we're talking about the state of education, and we're joined tonight with Timothy James and George Cook. You know George.
Yes.
So
yes. How you guys doing?
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
I'm fine.
I've been following the conversation off and on because I've been, you know, up, taking other calls and so forth, but I've been listening. And a while ago, one of you gentlemen, I'm not sure which one it was, brought up that we should build a school for every prison. And who brought that up? Which gentleman brought that up?
That was me. That was George.
Okay, George. Excellent. And that's something that always annoyed me, but I'm smart enough and I live long enough to know that that is purely a matter of economics. You know, we live in a country right now that put more value in prison than it does in education because prison is a multi-billion dollar business. And when you have a prison, and you have different contracts for prison, toilet paper contracts, silverware contracts, payphone contracts, somebody got to make the uniform. There's so many contracts when it comes to prison and a lot of money to be made, education becomes secondary. Because if you educate people better, the less people end up in prison and the less money prisons have. Because it's $75,000 a year to house a prisoner. So when it comes to schools versus prison, it's simply a matter of economics. And as long as those prisons are making that kind of money, and people like Mitt Romney and other rich folks invest in prisons, people buy stock in prison, as long as that's going on, education will continue to take a back seat in the eyes of government who is making money off prison. So what do you guys have to say to that?
I'll say that's absolutely true. I mean, average student, I believe, for an educated student is $20,000 a year. $20,000 versus $75,000, you're talking about a $55,000 difference. So, unfortunately, economics plays into not just that, but every aspect of education. A lot of things we would love to do, you simply can't afford to do. And in a country as rich as America, you shouldn't be making choices about children's futures based solely on economics, but unfortunately, that's what we have to do now in the state of education here in the United States.
Well, I tell you, in the state of New York, the only thing I can actually say, this governor has actually done something halfway that I have to give him credit for, is he shut down two prisons.
Mm-hmm.
But still in all, though, the monies that were saved did not get moved over to education. Again, money's going into the general budget instead of having it earmarked for something where we as a community feel is more important, is to put it into the school system. It didn't. They went in to plug other areas of the budget, and that's what's sad. I mean, it was a savings, but it didn't come to us. It went somewhere else, and that's part of the problem in the state of New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I have another question in regards to that as well. I know the prison thing compared to the economics of prison compared to education, that can be a long discussion because there's a lot of details to be involved in that. If you guys hear a baby back, that's my 2-year-old back here acting crazy. But the next question I had to ask is, you know, in China, it's very expensive here to have an education. Every student, everyone's in debt behind school, trade schools, college, whatever. Okay, we go in serious debt to try to get an education to go out here to better the United States, to better the economy, to strengthen the economy, but we're just constantly going in debt. When countries like China, whose children continue to excel beyond us, in many cases, their educations are free. Their educations are much, much less expensive, and they continue to excel past us, particularly in the area of mathematics. While we're raping our children here with the cost of education, and they're not excelling as the Chinese do, why do you think that dichotomy exists?
Well, it's simple. The Chinese make that a priority. It's their priority to be the best in the world. That's it. Their kids go to school. I mean, there's no 9-to-3 school in China. You're going to do a 10-9-hour day in school in China.
That's right.
You're going to take a year round. There's no summer vacation. If you ever even joke about taking away summer vacation in the United States, they will find you hanging. They will destroy you. That's the difference between you cannot even. People will let you say maybe the longer school day.
Uh-huh.
But if you even suggest of not having summer vacation or shortening it to 1 month, it's
right.
Not the kids. The kids adapt. The parents will run you out of this country on the rail. And that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
In China, they have a completely different system, completely different mentality.
Mm-hmm.
To them, education opens all doors. We
right.
say that here. But we don't want to put in the work or the time or make the sacrifices for it to happen. I mean, right now, I just brought up at a meeting making the school day longer. You'd have thought I asked for somebody's firstborn child. And these are the parents, not the kids, because kids adapt. Kids will make the change once they realize that's how it is and you have to deal with it. Parents don't adapt.
If I could just jump in there, in terms of where America stands in education, right now the United States is ranked 18th in the world in education. And with regards to fourth grade math scores, our scores have not improved and have been the same since 1995.
Mm-hmm.
So that just gives you a snapshot of where we stand in the world, let alone in our respective states. This is not good.
Mm-hmm. Can I take it from another perspective, but still keeping with the topic?
Sure.
Okay, and again, I'm just here to talk truth. I'm not about, you know, I'm not trying to be nice. Truth sometimes.
Truth will set you free.
Just truth.
Come on.
Okay.
Tell the truth and shame the devil.
All right. So let me take it from this point of view. Ladies and gentlemen, you also have to remember this. In some areas, even in communities of color where education may not be, well, is not doing well, there are some within our community that are doing very well. Why? Because that culture from where they came from and their respective countries, they came here for a better life, they brought that culture and that importance of education with them. And that's something that we have to look at and say, you know what, why is it that they can come to a failing school and still graduate and go on to better, from a grammar school to a better middle school to a better high school, even though it's a school that was deemed failing and they, in give or take in another year, they plan to shut it down. You see, again, that comes into that whole parenting thing. It comes into us taking a stand and saying we are going to walk into our schools and make a difference. In some cases, it's not always about dollars. Yes, it's important. We got to send their money, dollars, to the classroom. But on the same note, the culture from you know, in our community, from wherever you're from, whether it's Jamaica, you know, Trinidad, wherever, they bring a different culture to the system where they put a strong emphasis on education as a family. You know, China, the whole nation does it. Here, it's different segments within our community, and that's a problem. I don't know why we haven't reinvent ourselves and say we are going to make this our priorities. We haven't done that. But again, a failing school can still, in many cases that it's been shown in South Jamaica, can still educate a child, and he can go on to higher education because of the involvement of the family and taking a strong look at, hey, if this teacher isn't teaching, I want to sit in that classroom as you did. You sat in that classroom and made sure that your child was doing well. Again, what is more important? Is our child more important, or, you know, some of the other things that kind of get in the way? Yes, I know we got to pay our bills. But on the same note, somehow parents, and I can tell you parents who have 2, 3, and 4 kids, and somehow they make these meetings. They get involved. And I'll tell you right now, I know one parent right now that grounded her child from Florida, okay, because she had that much fear in that child, and that child knew when if he did something, you know, left that house after she said you're grounded from Florida, he knew he was in trouble. And we have to go back to that, and we have to make that our priority as a community. So no matter what happens in Albany, we still going to make sure our schools do well, because in certain communities that don't look like us, no matter what happens in Albany, those communities do well. And whether they get more money or not, they still seem to function well. That's something we have to look at amongst ourselves.
But you know excuse me, Bree, for a second.
Yeah.
But you know that there's a certain amount of empowerment in stupidity. And here's my point. when the powers that be, you know, higher government or wealthy or whatever you may call them, when they feel like that they can continuously pull the wool over the rest of our eyes by using the same tricks over and over again. And when you get in our age group, 40s, 50s, you live for a few decades. So you start seeing, you've been seeing these same tricks over and over and over again. Different people, same tricks, okay? We keep falling for the same tricks because we insist on staying stupid. And so to them, there's great benefit in stupidity. Because as long as we're stupid, they can keep becoming more wealthy. We can still keep paying $300 for Michael Jordan sneakers because we don't understand that they were made for $5 overseas. We can keep paying $500 for a handbag that was made for $10 in some sweatshop. We can keep doing those things because they know we're stupid. You see? So there's a great benefit to them in pushing and nurturing stupidity. It is up to us, like you guys keep saying, as individuals and as parents, to push education on our children. We can't depend on them to do that because they're not going to do it. Everything comes down to economics in America. This is a capitalist society. Everything comes down to economics. The common cold comes down to economics. They can cure that, but they'll put too many pharmaceuticals out of business. They want you to stay sick, okay? So whether it's medicine, whether it's education, whether it's prison, whatever it is, in this country, everything comes down to economics at its core. So that's a tough uphill thing to fight when you're dealing with these powerful, powerful people that are up high that have no interest in your well-being. They may put the smoke screen out that they care about the little guy and they want the kid to do this, that, and the third, but really they don't. So it's a, how do you fight that? I mean, that's a very, very tough battle to fight unless you're walking with Christ himself to come down and say, listen, we're going to walk up into the government and just clean house.
Well, let me tell you something. Okay, let me tell you something. The power in the schools now dealing with education is what's called the school leadership teams in the city of New York. School leadership teams are now the power. It used to be PTAs, it used to be the school board itself, then the PTAs. School leadership teams, they are the ones that make the decision for how the principal is supposed to spend the budget as far as the whatever excess money is available. But she reports to the school leadership team first before she then reports to the PTA and then just the general population in the community. The issue is we have to join that school leadership team. And you can have the sad point is that you just need a minimum of seven people to have a school leadership team. And so seven people will make the decision for the whole school. And keeping in mind that leadership team has to have teachers on that team. Parents must outnumber them, but you still have, say, four people that, you know, who are involved and say, okay, I'm going to be here and make sure that the school is doing for my child. Four people are sitting next to the principal if the principal adheres to what the rules are when it concerns school leadership teams, is making the decision for the entire school body. And that's sad because by the time it reaches the PTA, the decision is already made. And that's why I say, okay, we know the nonsense from Albany, again, talking of New York City, we know the nonsense that's going on up there when it concerns education, but as far as what we can do down here, leadership teams are the power for now, and principals are supposed to adhere to what they want. And if it's not educationally sound, she has to show them proof, and there's ways of at least coming to common ground, forcing him or her to come to common ground. That's one way that we can make a difference here. Again, the bad point is school leadership teams most of the time meet during the day. The average parent is working. So, again, and they do that. Why? Because they only want a bare minimum number of parents to be on that leadership team. But if parents, you know, make sure that they say, look, we are going to be there. That leadership team meets some schools, they meet bi-monthly. Other schools, they meet monthly. if we can make sure that parents join, make sure that they go on that leadership team, and when the dollars are being discussed, when they talk about, well, we're going to cut this and that program, well, you know what? I know principals that just laid it out on the table and brought in the leadership team where as many parents wanted to come and see, and she said, look, this is what you can't touch. This is the classroom. This is retirements and all these other things here. Here is what we can touch. Let's come together to figure out how we're going to best spend this money that will give us the best bang for the buck, and let's do it together.
Okay.
Principals will do it if you force their hand.
That's right.
Problem is parents won't be there in some cases. And, again, I don't want to sound like I'm kicking parents in the tail. What I'm saying is that we got to say, look, this is our community. We're going to go into that school and say, no, you are going to educate, and if you're not, we are going to get rid of you as a principal and those teachers who are refusing to work. And, again, we need more teachers also that look like us so they understand our culture.
Well, thank you, Timothy, for that that perspective. What I want to do at this point, I want to take a break, and when we come back, we have some callers in the queue. I also want to try to get to some other questions before the show ends, or we're just going to have to table it for part two. But you all are listening to the Bree Life Radio Show, and we will be back in a moment.
Everybody's looking for a leader.
So how's that working for you, buddy?
The next Martin Luther King, Malcolm X.
I don't know, Marcus Garvey.
You figure it out.
But here's the question. What if you walk down the street yourself?
Yourself.
Oh, I know. You're waiting for that glory bus to come and pick you up. Well, you just sit there and wait.
And wait.
And maybe, and just maybe, you might get picked up. But here's a novel idea. Walk down the street yourself.
Just walk down the street yourself.
You know, as many leaders as we have had, you think you have leader practice by now. So you should be ready to lead yourself down the street. Because, hey, you never know. You might get there. Just having fun, folks. This has been Mark Said It in under a minute.
And we're back. This is the Bree Life Radio Show. I'm joined tonight with Timothy James and George Cook and my co-host, Red. And we're discussing the state of education. Gentlemen, once again, I want to thank you both for participating tonight. This conversation has been very informative. It's been very provocative. And I'm looking so much forward to part two. There are two questions that I'm hoping that we could possibly get to before the end of the show. One is, again, what are your feelings on charter schools? I know George is chewing at the bit to get to this topic.
Yes, I am.
And I also want to discuss, and maybe this might have to be for part two, what are your feelings about teaching etiquette in school? It was a proposal that I had pitched to the junior high school that I went to, because I happened to be there one day because my son attended seventh grade there, and oh my goodness, what I encountered with those young ladies walking through the halls, the profanity that was coming out of their mouths, I was like, oh my goodness, there needs to be some type of intervention here, because I don't remember using profanity in the hall, or my friends walking through the hallways in the schools behaving the way I see these young people behaving. So I just wanted to see if I could get some feeling on your thoughts on that particular topic. But before we go to our next question, I see that we have a caller from 347-393 on the line. Let's bring them on.
Hello.
Hello, peace and blessings. You've reached the Bree Life Radio Show.
Sabrina, how are you doing? This is Ron.
Hello, Ronald. How are you? Thank you for calling in. What's your question?
Calling to give you a shout. Sabrina, I'm just calling to give a shout-out. I'm out here on the road out here, on the wheel.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, and thank you for supporting the Bree Life Radio Show. I love you on purpose, and thank you very much.
Okay, I wish you the very best, and to your panel also, okay?
Okay, thank you. And I want to give a shout-out to my friend Ronald Badger. He helped me last week when I was on the side of the road. So thank you again, Ronald. So that's good. So we could get to our next question. Charter schools. What say you, George?
I think most people really don't know what a charter school is. And first,
so please,
of all, a charter school is a public school. A charter school is a public school that has the luck of they get to pick its students. It would be like you telling me I could pick my own basketball team and I pick LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Kobe Bryant, Dwight Howard, and Deron Williams and tell you, look, we're doing great. Charter schools get most of them don't take students with special needs. They don't take behavior problems. And they take students that are basically doing okay. If you think those lotteries aren't fixed, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to show you. These schools take good students and then come to the state. Look what we did. We did great. And they take public dollars. Every penny a charter school gets comes out of a public school. It comes from another public school, normally in that same district where it's at. So you're taking money from one group to give to another because it's an infinite amount of dollars. There's not this great amount of money going around. It's an infinite amount of dollars. You're taking from one group to give to another. And many of these schools, when they're forced to take a diverse body of students, you find out they're no better than the public schools. Charter schools are normally only good as the man or woman actually founded it. And that person, many of these schools get in trouble later on because of accounting, financial reasons, cooking the books. I mean, there are a lot of issues with charter schools, and they've been painted as this great panacea, this great answer to all our educational problems. They are public schools that get to pick their own students, and they 9 times out of 10, they pick the cream of the crop and then brag about how good they are. I know I may sound upset about this, but I think they're misrepresented to the public. And people need to know that they are taking public tax dollars away from other schools.
Woo. Well, you wasn't joking when you said you felt some fire about it. So, Timothy, what say you on that topic?
Well, again, you know, charter schools are a business. And that's pretty much the issue when it comes to charter schools. Parents believe that charter schools are better. And understand, when a charter school just opened up really literally about 1,000 feet from my door because the Catholic school closed and they seized the building. Here's the thing. You had all of these parents that ran to that school from two schools that are surrounding it that are doing well. They received an A twice, and that's pretty. That's difficult. The way the state changes its criteria to get a mark of an A. They took their kids out of those two high performing schools. For now, the schools were performing high, and they put their children in this brand new charter school. Now, the first thing I said when they went to their maximum number, just to make it into the lottery for them to then draw that number for their child to go in. The first thing I said to parents when I went to the meeting was, I said, "Wow, so tell me how well the school is doing." And they looked at me and said, "What do you mean? The school is just starting." I said, "Exactly. So what makes you think this is a better school than the one that you just took your child out of simply because you heard it's going to be a charter school? So all of a sudden, this school is better than where you were. You have no clue to how this school is going to be for 3 years when it receives its first grade. And in 3 years, this could be one of the worst schools, or it could be a very good school. But the fact of the matter is, it is a mystery until you receive that grade. Now, it's the perception that charter schools are better. I say perception because let's look at one of the main components of it. You know, in the state of New York, they recently changed that to now they have to take special ed kids. And let me let y'all also know something, is that New York City has been closing charter schools. We lost one in the Rockaways. We lost one on the other side of South Jamaica. There's two others on the chopping block right by this community. So as they say, charter schools are so great, why are we beginning to close them? Because they're not, they've been found to not perform well. So, again, the real issue is the perception of it all. So parents will run there with their child, and they'll be involved. Because the belief is it's better. The reality is that if I can just finish the last statement, the reality is that we're going to see how well these new schools are going to perform when now teachers, the UFT will now have a union inside the charter schools. They will conform to the same rules as the regular New York City schools because, again, when the charters first opened, they didn't have that protection. Now they will. Let's see how well they do versus the New York City school and comparing it to a similar community and see how well they do and let's see their grade over the next 3 years.
Okay. So then my I guess the second part of that question is what tools should a parent utilize to find out how schools are measuring up before they choose a school because of zoning or a school being in your district? How should parents find out how all these schools are being graded? George, I'm going to put that to you first, and then Timothy.
Well, in New Jersey, all public schools, there's a yearly report. The public schools report yearly.
Yeah, exactly.
Unlike charters, which just go 2 or 3 years without reporting, and like you said, all of a sudden,
in New Jersey
as well, this year a lot of charters are closing because they go 2 or 3 years without reporting to the state. Then all of a sudden, when the state gets the report, oh, my God, what's going on? And unfortunately, parents can't see a report because there isn't one. A lot of parents go by what they hear from other parents. Oh, my child is doing so great here. So we had one school in New Jersey where they literally put one address for the school, and the school was located on another street. This is how crooked the person that ran that school was. So a lot of times parents don't know because it's 2 or 3 years before a report comes out letting you know how the school is doing financially and academically. So, I mean, it's for the charter school, unless there's something already on file, unless that school has been around long enough to have a track record, me personally, I would not send my child there. Why would you send your child to a school without a track record, with something you can, and I mean an extensive track record, where have these kids gone once they've left the school? How have prior students done? I mean, just because it has charter in front of its name does not necessarily mean it's a better, and there are some great charter schools. In New Jersey, we have the North Star Academies. They do a great job, but they're ran by great people who take what they do seriously. But when you tell some people you have 2 or 3 years before you have to report to the state, all kinds of nonsense happens. I mean, teachers are not, I don't know about New York, but in New Jersey, charter school teachers don't make the same pay as a public school teacher. So there's a lot of turnover when it comes to teachers. So as soon as the teacher can get a job at a quote-unquote regular school, the teacher's out of there. Because they can make $10,000 more in the public school system. So I would ask parents to really do their homework, look online to see if there's anything online with the state as far as reports. Like a public school, you'll see the yearly report of grades, student size, all that stuff. If there's not one for a charter school, I would have questions about sending my child or anyone's child there.
Okay. Well, before Timothy answers, we have a caller, and that caller is coming in from Houston, Texas. It is my near and dear friend, Mark, in Houston, Texas. Peace and blessings.
Hey, peace and blessings. Been enjoying your show.
Peace and blessings.
I'm listening to it, enjoying your show, and enjoy the gentleman sharing a perspective. And, I have an interesting opinion and view of it because I don't know anything about New Jersey or New York schools.
I do know about Houston schools. I know about Chicago schools. And I know about Minneapolis schools. I know a lot about charter schools because my wife, who's one of my ex-wife now, she taught at a couple charter schools in the St. Paul school area, as well as she taught at St. Paul schools, and I was involved with youth from various that went to charter schools as well as to regular schools. And the thing I think about the whole issue of education in general, and I say, while I understand what they mean, charter schools are closing. Charter schools are run by people who may have inability to manage finances properly and things of that nature. However, charter schools arise out of, and the reason parents look at charter schools at any point is because they are clearly unhappy with the results they're getting from the school system the established school system. And the funny part about it is while we talk about the inability or the bad accounting, I think public schools have worse accounting than charter schools do. Charter schools are definitely, to me, they're just a symptom of a problem, and the problem is understanding how to hold any educational system accountable. And I think when I think about Chicago public schools who just got off of a strike, when I look at what's going on in Minneapolis schools right now, and what I see happening in HISD, which is the Houston Independent School District, it's just really interesting at the fact that parents are not happy with the results that they're getting from the schools. But there's a twofold problem. Number one, the schools aren't very accountable. Number one, to even their constituency. Number one. Number two, the parents are not very active as holding them accountable. So there's a gap. And what always happens is the kids are the ones who suffer every time. So, you know, that's my biggest issue about education in general is that we are not holding our educators accountable. We talk about test scores, and again, I was thinking about what you were saying about having someone that looks like me in front of me teaching me, so to speak. And then I was listening to what Bree was talking about when she was talking about etiquette. And I dare say if she saw young ladies walking around cursing in the hallways, that they probably have heard a lot of stuff at home before they even got to the school. So you got to, again, like I said, it's just so interconnected. And while I am not by any means yay or nay on charter schools in one way or the other, I do think that the accounting practices of these big schools, the fact that these school systems, I mean, they need to be looked at. I mean, they need to be scrutinized because the reality is that schools are always asking for money. They're always asking for money. They always talk about getting underpaid. But I know teachers, and one thing I'll say is I have a good friend who's a teacher in the Cy Fair School District, which is right outside of Houston, one of the best school districts basically in the country as far as grading is concerned. But what we all laugh about is this. No matter how much you pay a teacher, when a teacher cares, a teacher cares. And you can never pay them enough to care. So those who really care and really want to advocate for kids, they're doing it. You couldn't pay them any more to advocate. Would they want more? It would help their lifestyle. But it's not going to make them care anymore. It's just
okay.
So anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Well, Mark, we appreciate you calling in and giving your two cents. We always like to hear from you. And
thank you, Mark.
And we're looking forward to you participating in future shows.
For sure.
Timothy, do you have anything to say with regards to anything that Mark has brought up, or do you want to touch on the closing up the topic of charter schools? Because we have about 6 minutes left in the show. I want to give you at least a minute apiece, a minute and a half apiece to, you know, say anything that's on your mind and heart. And we're definitely going to have a part two.
Oh, okay. Okay. And, you know, finishing out charters again. Charters, let's be honest, the money follows the child. We know that. the problem in the state of New York, they were creating a new funding stream for the charters. Somewhere along the line, it got lost in the last legislature that just took place. It got lost. So again, the importance of education somehow, in all the infighting dealing with the Affordable Health Care Act and how it's going to affect the state of New York, they did not finish the issue of education and dealing with the charter school system. They made some changes within the system itself, but again, when it came down to the funding, they never completed that. So that's sad, and I hope that's the first thing they take up in January to deal with charter schools and the regular public school system. Now, on to just education as a whole in the city of New York. Again, this is a very large system. We educate 1.1 million students a year. That is a huge number of students. This system, we all can agree, needs to be overhauled. The question is, who has the better idea to overhaul it? I don't believe we should have over 200 consultants. And again, over this last 5 to 7 years, we haven't seen much movement in the work that they have done. So in all honesty, I don't know if breaking up the system and each borough having its own system, I don't know if that's the idea. I do know this. Parents, I just said, I don't know. I said the possibility. Mm-hmm. I can say this. No system will do well without having the parents a part of it and without making it inviting for them to come into that school and to sit down and to really understand what's going on and give them a role, a real role in that school doing better.
Okay.
A lot of times, you know, again, parents, a lot of times teachers and principals sometimes don't want that much parent participation because then they get called to account on what they're not doing. So, you know, the reality is it's a huge system. It needs to be overhauled, and we need to sit at the table when they make these decisions so that our needs are met.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your thoughts and your ideas and your perspective on the state of education. George, I'm going to ask you at this time to take a moment to just give your closing thoughts, and we're definitely going to have a part two. We are definitely going to have a part two. So, George, at this time, closing statement.
What I would like to say is, as African-Americans, we have to stop talking about making education a priority and do something. I mean, I'm on a scholarship society. We give out scholarships every year, and I can't pronounce one name because everyone's African or Haitian, and they go to the same schools the other kids go to. So, as I said before, we have to follow their examples. We have to make it a priority. We talk about it. Everybody says they're right. If we did everything we said, our kids would be they are brilliant, but there would be more of them in school. There would be more of them in higher positions. We would be CEOs, all these things, if we did more than just pay lip service to our child's education. And when it comes to parents, I know everybody's tired of hearing this, but parental involvement is key. I don't know if any of you guys remember The Wire, the old show. It used to come on HBO. Well, whenever Omar would come around, everybody would start screaming, "Here comes Omar, here comes Omar." When a concerned parent walks into a school, the same thing happens. Everybody in that school knows so-and-so parent is there, and everybody's getting their act together.
That's
so
right.
If you want your kid to get what they deserve, be that parent. Be that person who shows up unannounced. And trust me, your kid will be taken care of. You won't have those problems, and it shouldn't be that way, but unfortunately that's the way it is. So make it a priority and go to school, find out what's going on, and go for your kid's bag.
Well, George, I want to thank you. I want to thank Timothy again. I want to thank Red for being my co-host this evening. This discussion has been on the state of education in not just New York and New Jersey, but from different perspectives. I want to thank all the listeners and my guest callers. And again, tomorrow we're going to have the freestyle. So call in with your freestyle, 424-220-1862. And in parting, I wish you all peace and blessings. And just know I love you all on purpose. Thank you,
guys. Have a good night.
Yeah, yeah. A-Dream. In the building. Shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in. Look.
Yes, sir.
Look. We came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Mexico.
So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down relationship to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
Hey.
Personally, I mean, I learned so much just hearing you talk. You know, I might have to have a show just with you because you're like me. You can walk into a room and suck up all the oxygen. Oh, no. You. Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.